At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We've got a bunch of reporters. I can't even keep track of how many reporters we have. We're covering everything.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
more like Ancient Phalians.
That's pretty good.
That is my version. Toby and I talked about doing an AI version of Tucker Carlson, who features prominently in this episode, but we were afraid of being sued by Tucker Carlson, so I did that version, which I believe was spot-on replica.
Almost indistinguishable.
Yeah, it's like listening to a mirror if you're Tucker Carlson.
Yep. Listening to a mirror, yep. Yeah.
Anyway, this is more like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who is interested in disclosing things and having things disclosed to me.
I'm Toby Ball. I am the creator and host of Strange Arrivals.
That's right. And this is a program in which we go through episodes of the History Channel program, Ancient Aliens, and we dissect them for their nonsense. And we're trying to see what they're really telling us. The episode we're doing this week is from season 14, episode 21, Countdown to Disclosure. Originally aired, I bet you didn't know this, Toby, November 22nd, 2019. Does that date mean anything to you?
Well, there's the Kennedy assassination, but it wasn't 2019.
No, it was 1963. So this is 56 years to the day after he was assassinated. Coincidence?
There are no coincidences.
That's the right answer. So this is an episode that Toby and I felt like we needed to get into at some point because disclosure, meaning the date in which the government opens up all their files, reveals all the information they have about the truth behind UFOs, extraterrestrials, visitations, technology, is something that folks in the UFO community have long hungered after. And is kind of foundational to this show, meaning Ancient Aliens, and therefore meaning more like Ancient Phalians, because it's the concept that brings together not only understanding the truth about UFOs and extraterrestrials, but also what the government knows, so you have the whole government cover-up part of things. And so this episode, which again comes fairly late in the series, would seem to be really exciting one, really full of a lot of interesting details and hot goss. Toby, did you find that to be the case with this episode?
I found that not to be the case at all.
No, it wasn't that exciting, was it?
No, it was actually a huge disappointment.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of the impression I had, too.
See you next week.
No, Toby.
Oh, we got to go through it anyway. All right.
Yeah, it opens with something that we don't see a lot of in most of the episodes of Ancient Aliens, which, of course, look at hieroglyphs and weirdos with necklaces talking about, you know, the way stone is hewn and that sort of thing. In this case, the episode opens with the man who is our current president and was the president then, too, Donald J. Trump, in an interview with Tucker Carlson, talking head of Fox News. At the time, I guess he was still at Fox News. He's since been ousted and now is somewhere, I don't know.
He lives in Maine.
He lives in Maine, talking about the existence of UFOs, and Tucker feels like he's got a real gotcha with Trump, asking him, are they real? And Trump, to his credit, who's not known for his lack of bombast, was actually pretty measured. He's like,
Well, I don't want to really get into it too much, but personally, I tend to doubt it. But we have had people saying that they've seen things. I'm not a believer, but, you know, I guess anything's possible.
We spoke to a government official recently.
He was very like, I'm not interested in this. I don't think anything's going on.
Yeah. I think he, you know, correctly realizes that he could, like, kind of look like an idiot by entertaining it too much. It's just it's safer not to get too into it.
And so then we have a subsequent interview in this episode between Tucker sitting down with Nick Pope, one of the main characters of the Ancient Aliens series. And Pope seems very excited to talk to Tucker. Tucker seems, I don't know, he kind of seems, his face has the appearance of like a cocktail wiener. Like it's a little bit plumped up. It's very surprised looking.
Yeah.
He just sort of looks lost.
The whole thing is a lie.
And so they're talking about this interview with Trump. And Pope tries to suggest that Trump gave more of a serious reply than he did. Like he was really engaging the issue. But I didn't really feel like that was happening at all. So he was kind of leaning into it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, for a guy like Nick Pope, like I think the idea that a person who is in a, you know, quote unquote mainstream media outlet, even though it's, you know, Tucker Carlson, the fact that he's engaging with the President of the United States on UFO topics, I think feels just like this huge win. The part that's a little bit hard to understand is that, you know, Trump does give like a considered response, but his considered response is, yeah, there are no UFOs. But he doesn't seem to care about that. As a matter of fact, gets Tucker Carlson to kind of be like, yeah, I don't know if I believed him when he gave that reply. Like that was Tucker Carlson's personal take in reading the president.
You don't want people like that in charge. You don't.
Which is kind of rich, given that Tucker Carlson has subsequently become kind of known for being willing to take crazy assertions from either Trump or Putin or whoever at face value. So I guess when his BS radar is activated, that probably means something or doesn't mean anything.
Does it mean anything?
What does that even mean? Like, why don't you tell? I mean, what?
Doesn't mean
it's
anything.
It's a way into the episode. You got Trump saying, yeah, aliens. And then you have Tucker really trying to lean hard into maybe there's something there, talking about his body language. And, you know, one of Tucker's tropes is to say, you know, the government knows something, they're covering it up. And that's kind of the case here. Why are we not getting more into this? Now, I don't know Tucker Carlson other than as someone who looks sort of like a cocktail wiener with a suit. But at least one of us on this podcast has more experience with Tucker than I do. And that person is you, Tobias.
I did go to college with him.
Yeah.
He was a couple years behind me. I briefly interacted with him at a frat party where he was, if memory serves, was trying to get me to drink from a wineskin that he was carrying around.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything worse than white people?
And I politely declined and kept sipping my beer. I also remember him wearing like a beanie, like not the ones with the propellers on top, but like kind of the old school baseball hats. So anyway, that's my main memory of Tucker Carlson back in the day. I think he was friends with a young woman I dated for a little bit there, but You know, I was never around him very much except at this one frat that he was a part of that I would sometimes go to parties at.
They're all weird, creepy, isolated people.
He left an impression on you, or at least that much of one, but it doesn't seem like you were bowled over by his charisma.
No. You know, the school I went to, there's a lot of rich kids who didn't go to the Ivies and went to Trinity, and Trinity's a good school. But there was this sort of wealthy upper crust that he was kind of part of, and I was not.
And that fact has been a thorn in your side ever since, and now here you
not
are.
As much as is his side, I think.
Yeah, probably.
He's been haunted by it. Now, he's in D.C. I went to D.C. right after college, and so did he. So we were also in D.C. at the same time. Again, I didn't run into him, but, you know, he was more of a media figure at that point. And so you get, little stories about ridiculous shit he was doing.
This is a hoax, just like the Russia hoax.
So disclosure, Toby, wouldn't you say, has been a trope among the UFO set for quite some time, as long as there has been a government that possibly could be concealing information about UFOs from Roswell on. There have been people who have been saying, why won't you tell us about the UFOs? And that has sort of caught fire even more since 2017, 2018, when the New York Times started publishing stories about how there was a program that the government had to study these unidentified flying objects, which now are called unidentified aerial phenomena. And a lot of that revolves around a series of videos taken by the U.S. Navy by pilots who saw things, or their radar picked up things, and then that information was subsequently released to the public and created this whole furor. You know, again, this is in the last 6-7 years that has really fueled the modern resurgence in interest in disclosure and in what the government knows, doesn't know. But it seems like for a lot of people, they're very excited because they're like, we're getting so close now. They're actually telling us stuff. And that tension between the government hiding stuff from us and the government revealing stuff is sort of what powers this episode, but also confuses it, because they can't seem to really decide whether they land on the side of the government now wanting to fess up or more wanting to continue to conceal things, even as they're saying, well, they're telling us all this stuff about these videos, but they're definitely hiding stuff from us. Didn't you find that tension was sort of hard to parse?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that they have to deal with is that if they do get a piece of like seemingly really good evidence, like what does that mean about the plot to cover up everything they know? And I think what they generally kind of think of is that it's sort of like a soft launch. You know, they'll throw some stuff out there, get people kind of used to looking at it, get in the New York Times, but it's just not like this sort of dominating story. I think that's the kind of mental gymnastics you kind of have to do in this situation. You know, I think the big thing, like you identified with like 2017, is when I think Nick Pope called it disclosure with a big D.
Yeah.
Which is kind of unfortunate phrasing.
Even when you say it with a British accent, Toby.
I do not do accents, but yeah.
It still sounds a little off, yeah.
It sounds a little off. Mm-hmm. Drop clip here, obviously.
Disclosure with a big D, as I call it.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that kind of changed, and that some of that's like an influx of money from like Tom DeLonge into the Stars Academy and things like that. And there's like a new group of commentators, several of which you see on this show, like Jeremy Corbell, who's sort of been pushing this disclosure narrative. But you're right. I mean, it goes back to the very, very early days, like the early 50s, when what eventually became Project Blue Book started off. And this Project Sign, and then it was...
Project Grudge,
and then it became Project Blue Book. There was the Robertson panel, which they talk a little bit about in this as well. And then right before Blue Book was closed, there's the Condon Commission, which were two attempts to sort of come to grips at what evidence the government had through these programs and try to draw conclusions. But of course, people who are, you know, UFO believers or sort of conspiracists or whatever, think that it was actually sort of a way to contain and cover up the small amount. You know, they talk about, you know, there's all these cases and a small percentage are unexplainable. But part of the reason for these commissions is to sort of sweep those under the rug, even though, you know, those are obviously the ones of most interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always a number of them that in all of these reports, all these studies, there's some percentage that they could not identify. They were unidentified, Toby, flying objects. So, you know, a lot of them are planes or balloons or tricks of the light, birds, But then obviously not everybody's going to be able to go and figure out what they are. So
right.
It's those ones that, you know, one number that they quoted was 10%. They said 10% unidentified. What are these things? We don't know.
That feels high to me. I didn't think it was that many. It's been a while since I looked at this stuff. But again, it's a whole mixture. Like in that, whatever number that is, it's a mixture. Some of the stuff was just like, there's not enough data. Like we don't have enough data to like make any determination. Yeah. And then sometimes it was like, there is data, but we just can't figure out what it is. But I think the important thing, the thing they're constantly sort of emphasizing is, just because we can't figure it out doesn't mean it's extraterrestrials, right? Yeah. I mean, it's probably just something else that we just can't, we haven't been able to deduce what it is yet. It
could be pterodactyls. That'd be
it
the
could
wild
definitely
thing.
Be pterodactyls.
What if it was dinosaurs? We're like, nobody was looking for dinosaurs, but that's what all those unexplained cases were.
Dinosaurs.
Flying dinosaurs.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
So the videos. So the episode cuts to the Pentagon, September 18th, 2019. A Navy spokesman confirms that these military videos are, in fact, authentic. What these pilots saw and what was then released are for real. These are videos that were taken from the Theodore Roosevelt aircraft carrier from summer of 2014 to March of 2015. And that's going to kind of power the rest of this episode, is why are they giving us this information? And how close then are we to getting the full deal? And again, they go all over the place trying to figure out what it means that this stuff is being revealed. As you said, Pope says disclosure with a big D. And his take is that society is being prepped for this disclosure through these revelations, little drips of information here and there, trying to like pave the way for some grand reveal, so that there won't be shock and panic when it is totally revealed what the government has known when, where, and so that people won't go running through the streets and screaming. And then apparently the military had forbidden reports for many years. They weren't filing them, and then they started up again. And so again, that to Pope is the suggestion that if they're loosening up their willingness to accept these, then there must be a change. Is it going to come? Tsoukalos drops in just long enough to offer one of his beautiful bon mots. In this case, it's...
And if it's not someone from our planet, well, who else is left?
Who is left, Obi?
That's profound.
I challenge you to tell me who is left.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. Yeah, I don't really have... It's just a little Martian guy from the Bugs Bunny cartoons with a Roman gladiator helmet.
Could be. Yeah, Marvin.
That's my guess.
That's a good one.
Yeah, Marvin the Martian.
So then we're back to Tucker's interview, which recurs throughout this, with Nick Pope. Tucker says most news organizations are going to avoid covering this until...
The alien king breaks into the 6 o'clock news and demands obedience.
And then he laughs and laughs at his joke. Even though throughout this episode so far, we've seen New York Times headline after New York Times headline about all the stuff that's going on. It's like, I'd say they're covering it. Tucker, I'd say that part of the problem is that they are taking it too seriously. And then the show cuts to furthering this argument that in some way society is preparing us for this imminent disclosure, and particularly books and movies and popular entertainment. They go through, they show some titles. It looks like, you know, somebody's dad's DVD collection. There's, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek, obviously those films coming out, preparing us for disclosure. Arrival, Contact, and then a couple of others. All, you know, alien movies. Movies about aliens contacting us. And that is presented as evidence that they're coming and that we're just all, you know, it's like inoculation. It's like a vaccine against panic.
But it doesn't, you know, it's just not a very good argument, right? Because there's all kinds of genres of entertainment that are out there. This is just one of them. And, like, why would this be any different than any others? I mean, it, you know.
Yeah.
It seems like you're going from a situation where, I mean, I think this whole episode, like, you have to be coming at it from a situation where you are certain that both there are aliens visiting Earth and that the government knows about it and is covering it up. And then you have to take the next step, which is that the government is eventually going to disclose it. And so they're doing these things that are trying to prep us for it. And then you take the step to, well, that's what these sci-fi movies are about. But it's like all these ifs before you even get to that. You could have some nefarious government plot about all kinds of things that there are movies about. So, I mean, it's kind of nonsensical in a lot of ways. It only kind of works if you have the assumption or the certainty that the government knows they're aliens and they're covering it up, but they're going to let us know at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess by that rationale, if you see, for example, a spate of movies about Dracula, that means right. That the government is preparing us for disclosure about Draculas. They're coming. We got to get ready for it.
They're called vampires, Brandon.
I thought they were called Draculas, no?
Draculas.
Draculas.
It's a whole horde of Draculas coming at me.
Yeah, it's a horde of Draculas. Well, you do your thing and I'll do mine.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. So, you know, what's wild about this episode is that there are a number of actual famous and influential people in here. I mean, Tucker, you can argue about how famous and influential he is, but he does have some. The president, he throws some weight around. And then John Podesta over across the aisle, yeah. Obama's chief of staff, who apparently is a big UFO believer, and comes on here sounding very credulous, calling these early leaks, these early releases of information, kind of a disinfectant, I think was the term he used in order to sort of clear the air and let us understand, like, something's coming down the pike. And from there, we go back in time, July 1947, Roswell, considered the foundational lie, according to the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who was the former Minister of National Defense for Canada from 1963 to 1967. He says the first press release at Roswell, which said that it was a flying saucer, was the truth. Then a day later, they come back with another release that says, no, it was a weather balloon. Hellyer says, no, that was the lie. They were honest the first time, and then they changed their mind. So, okay. We have George Norrie of Coast to Coast. He's the one that says, from Project Blue Book, it's something like 10% that they couldn't explain. So you're going to have to take it up with George Norrie, who I believe is no longer with us.
Yeah, I mean, it could be 10%. It's been a while. I thought it was more like 3%, but in some ways it doesn't even matter, right? It's just that there's a handful of cases that can't be explained, and I think people basically agree about that. But what the implication of that is where people kind of diverge.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of these core things. One of the big reveals, quote-unquote, from these New York Times articles, which were written by Leslie Keene, Ralph Blumenthal, people who had been in the, let's say, the woo-woo space for a minute. Leslie Keene wrote a previous book about reincarnation.
She'd also written a book about UFOs. I mean, she's been into the UFO world for quite a while. She was Bud Hopkins' partner towards the end of his life.
Right. Bud Hopkins was an artist and a UFO abduction kind of a guy. He put a lot of people under hypnosis. A lot of the lore about alien abduction comes from him hypnotizing people and then them telling stories that sound kind of like he may have planted them.
Right. So she's been sort of in the UFO realm for quite a while. Ralph Blumenthal was a New York Times reporter. I think he's won, you know, multiple awards and stuff. But he became interested in UFOs and a sort of you know, he's a believer. I interviewed him for about an hour when I was doing Strange Arrivals, and some of that's in the show. Smart guy. Like, he's a good person. Like, he'd be a good person to bring on if you're a skeptic show and you want to talk to somebody who's a smart, sort of thoughtful believer. But they were the co-authors, for the most part, of the New York Times article.
Yeah.
And the follow-ups.
Yeah, which was kind of peculiar. I mean, like you said, they both have bona fides that qualify them to be actual journalists. They've done real work. But it is a little strange that New York Times really led with this. And it all kind of revolves around what is verifiable, that there was a program called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and that that was a program that was funded with not a ton of money, but $20 million or something like that.
Yeah, it was a very, over the course of the years, I mean, it was, you know, it was pocket change for the Pentagon. I can't remember right off the top of my head how much it was. And it was in the millions. But again, for a government program, like, it's just not that much.
Yeah. So what was the story there with what was called ATIP?
It's still a little confusing. So there's a couple different things that were going on. One was that money was being sent to Robert Bigelow's group to fund some research into UFOs that they were doing, and some of it was to fund an internal Pentagon, supposedly looking at, you know, UAPs. But I think there's still some question, or at least the last time I was sort of involved in trying to, like, get a handle on this stuff, there was some question about how much was actually being done. Is the word that's getting out, particularly through, like, Lou Elizondo, but, you know, Christopher Mellon as well, some of these people who are associated with these programs, like, how accurate is the information they're giving? Like, the Pentagon goes so far as to say Lou Elizondo wasn't involved in the program, or at least they did at one point. So I think that's still, like, a little uncertain, and, you know, serious journalists have tried to look into it, and I don't think there's been a super definitive answer. But again, it's a kind of money that's being spent on this, which sounds like, to, you know, if you were to have it in your pocket, you'd be psyched. But the reality is, to run, like, a real government program on, I think it was in the low tens of millions, I mean, it just doesn't get you very far. It just was not a major program.
And so Lou Elizondo, kind of the face of a lot of this over the last few years, he was some sort of vague government employee with some kind of clearance, but was involved with this Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and has really made a pretty good career for himself out of being the guy that's saying the government knows all this stuff, there's all this tech. He's kind of the modern face of the one who's ostensibly pulling back the curtain, but not ever really revealing anything. And then Robert Bigelow, rich guy.
He had Skinwalker Ranch for a while, and then he sold it to a guy named Brandon Fugel.
No relation.
But he's been involved in funding UFO research for a long time. And so, you know, one of the sort of legends surrounding, you know, UFO recovery is that it's actually in Las Vegas that Bigelow's got a warehouse where some of this recovered alien artifacts or whatever, spacecraft, are held. And he funded a institute for sort of life after death studies after his son passed away. So he's very wealthy from a motel chain that he started, I guess. And he's used it for different sort of paranormal research. I think he had Skinwalker Ranch and wasn't really finding what he was hoping to find. So he sold it to a real estate guy named Brandon Fugel, and he was the one who, like, created the whole, like, Skinwalker Ranch TV series and really marketed it pretty heavily.
Yeah. Another popular series, perhaps one we'll get into. Certainly we'll do the Skinwalker Ranch episode of Ancient Aliens before too long.
Yep.
We have to. By law, we have to. Because we're connecting the dots on this, Toby. We're connecting the dots.
It's a lot of fucking dots.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So that's that program. Not a huge one, not particularly very revealing, but that was the one that the New York Times really ran with, that seemed like it was the smoking gun, suggesting, oh, government is still looking into this whole, at that point now, was called UAP issue, and therefore they must know something. So everybody got all spun up about, oh, finally, disclosure is nigh. So then the episode pulls back a little bit, talks about the CIA had something called the Robertson Panel for these unsolved cases. And the conclusion, supposedly, from this panel was if it was disclosed that aliens are among us or that we have their technology or whatever, it might cause, quote, hysterical mass behavior. So therefore was the argument not to believe what you see. So the show is trying to say it was the CIA back in the day, reports like this that convince the government, no, we shouldn't be telling people these things because the big fear is that the public is going to lose its mind. Going to be riots in the streets, mass hysteria, et cetera, et cetera.
This is during the beginning of the height of the Cold War, and there's a lot of paranoia about what would the Soviet Union do to us. And one of the thoughts was like UFOs could be a psyop, right, to spread panic. So that was a real concern. You can think back to the Orson Welles radio program where he was doing War of the Worlds and was doing it as though it was a newscast. And there was this, it's turned out to be a myth, but of people panicking in the streets and stuff like that.
Nobody really panicked is what you're saying.
Nobody really panicked, right? I mean, it turned out that when people actually looked into it, it was more of an urban myth than anything else. But I think that was a big concern. And they weren't, you know, I mean, I think the conspiracist way of looking at it is, well, what if people realize that there are UFOs, what the fallout would be. And then the other way of looking at it is, you know, there's no UFOs and the real danger is that people think that there are.
Right.
So that's kind of what came out of that, you know, sort of like a Rorschach test where depending on whether you believe or you don't believe, it's either, you know, more nefarious government stuff or it's sort of a rational response to an urban legend. You're hoping it doesn't become like a mass delusion or a mass hallucination of every time people look up in the sky, they see something they don't immediately identify and assume that it's flying saucer.
Right. But the show would have you believe that this was the justification. The fear of mass hysteria was the justification for the government to put a lid on this. And then the argument further is that there are a brave group of souls who are trying to force disclosure. Like in 2013, there was the citizens hearing on disclosure. There's this video of all of these citizens, among whom Linda Moulton Howe, who's a recurring character on Ancient Aliens. Real interesting lady. She has a snappy beret in this, very cute little beret that she's wearing. And they're, you know, talking to senators, congresspeople, who seem like they're gamely going along with it, but don't seem particularly.
It's a small number.
Not a big group.
It's like six or eight people, maybe.
Yeah, a pretty small group. But that's their argument for it. There are people that are fighting for this disclosure.
I guess the only other thing that, you know, again, going back to like ATIP, but all these other things is it does make sense to have a group that's looking into unidentified aerial phenomena, right? I mean, I think the issue is sort of the assumption that what those things are alien. But, you know, technology is accelerating, certainly with drones. And so it is very important if we see stuff that we can't identify, and that's not ours, that we figure out what it is. But I think, you know, one of the problems that the government, including the military, has is that as soon as you start trying to do that, there's a lot of people who are like, aha, you know, aliens, and aren't looking at it as sort of a more rational response to, you know, the escalating pace of technology.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like with other episodes of Ancient Aliens, where you look at something like the pyramids or any great leap forward, the Wright brothers, any of this stuff. Anything that you say, it seems like something has created a paradigm shift. And therefore, that can't just be people doing it. It must be aliens who are, you know, influencing human events in some way. So similar to this idea that it's aliens that are creating the pyramids and that sort of thing, the other side of that is the government has all of this alien tech, and that's how they are creating things like the stealth bomber and, you know, drones and all of this stuff that seems new to the average person. The argument is, well, we got all that technology from Roswell or some other UFO crash, reverse engineered it, and now we have this cool new stuff. But the government doesn't want to reveal how they got this stuff, so they keep all that under wraps.
Well, that part's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that in mind, you have to assume, okay, the government's just trying to hide their toys from other governments. Perfectly reasonable. Then, of course, there's the flip side of it, which is the government has developed all these things on their own, which seems reasonable to assume. And the idea that, oh, it's UFOs is just an interesting smokescreen, just an interesting cover. Let them believe that if, you know, the Chinese government wants to believe we have UFOs and that's hiding the truth, then that's cool. Or just that so much of what people are seeing in the skies is new technology they haven't seen yet, like drones. And so they say, that's UFOs. But in reality, it's no, just stuff that we've created. They're calling it UFOs. So there's a whole, like, loop of causality that, you know, any number of things could cause any other number of things. Could be that the UFO technology was reverse engineered so that we would have modern things today, like the internet and streaming video, who knows. Or the other way to think about it is we're developing this stuff on our own and people are seeing it and going, that must be UFOs. So it's all very confusing, Toby. Very confusing.
Yeah, I don't really know how it all plays out now, but, you know, in the 70s and 80s and probably into the 90s, there was a lot of concern that UFO conferences and things like that were places where foreign agents could glean information about U.S. military projects by listening to stories of people who thought they'd seen UFOs. So there was, you know, an active disinformation campaign focused around UFOs to try and muddy the waters on all that. You know, the government just complicates things so much by, I think, being willing to use UFOs as a cover for things. And if nothing else, just to make things a little more confusing.
Yeah.
So again, like if the Chinese, like if that's even like a slight consideration that that's how we're getting this technology, I mean, I don't think there's any harm in that as far as we're concerned.
Yeah. So the show then takes us to December of 1960 to a Brookings Institute report on essentially space stuff that they produced for NASA. Somebody says it's this 160-page report suggesting that the Brookings Institute spent 160 pages talking about what happens when we encounter extraterrestrials. In fact, it's only like 2 pages. The rest of it is basic things about technology and space and, you know, all kinds of stuff. You can find the report, Toby. It's online. I went ahead and looked at it to see where the alien stuff was, and it's like a page and a half. And frankly, for the Brookings Institute being a think tank that you think of as being some real heavy hitters, the section on extraterrestrials seems kind of like something that one of these writers for the Brookings Institute, like it was late in the day, he was a little tired, he was ready to stretch out. Somebody had assigned him, you got to do the thing on the extraterrestrials. What happens if we encounter extraterrestrials? And I don't know, it's sort of, you can get the feel that here's a guy, he's loosening his tie, sitting back in his easy chair, he puts some jazz on the hi-fi, and it sounds kind of groovy. the knowledge that life existed in other parts of the universe might lead to a greater unity of men on Earth, based on the oneness of man, or on the age-old assumption that any stranger is threatening. Much would depend on what, if anything, was communicated between man and the other beings, since after the discovery there will be years of silence, because even the closest stars are several light years away, an exchange of radio communication could take twice the number of light years separating our sun from theirs. The fact that such beings existed might simply become one of the facts of life, but probably not one calling for action. Oh, okay. So, this is not a report that is trying to stir up a lot of great concern. It's pretty mellow. It's like, I don't know. They're far away. We're far away. It's nice to know there's other folks out there. Maybe we'll like each other a little bit more. But man, let's just kick back. That's cool. Nobody's hurting anybody.
It's all good.
Still, though, that's one of the reports that is evoked with kind of a sense of fear and the idea that, you know, the Brookings Institute was trying to exert some kind of social control, trying to warn NASA that people might freak out if that's the case, that aliens are revealed. So maybe we shouldn't do it. Anyway, it's all part of the argument of why disclosure has been prolonged this long. But one of the things I was thinking about that we can talk about very quickly is you have all these people who are pushing for disclosure, which is in and of itself interesting. And, you know, you have to be kind of conspiracy minded. And so I was looking up the conspiracy psychology and found a couple of different studies that were all trying to identify what is it that makes a conspiracy theorist tick. And one report said, you know, there's personality characteristics that might be associated with belief in conspiracy theories, like personality disorders or belief in the paranormal or even political ideology. So in political ideology, there have been studies that show that people who are more right-leaning and conservative tend to be more likely to believe in conspiracies, and that maybe dovetails with paranormal belief, which I guess makes sense. If you're conservative, you're going to tend to be more skeptical of the government and therefore less likely to believe the stuff they're saying or doing or not saying and doing. So that kind of makes sense.
Although I feel like I feel like people on the far left also kind of fall into that. It feels like the extremes on each end kind of share that,
yeah,
a little bit. You know, I think the far left is also very distrustful of government.
Yeah, that's true. Once you get to those extremes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then there was a 2018 study that said people who believe in conspiracy theories will have personality traits like paranoid or suspicious thinking, eccentricity, low trust in others, belief in the world is a dangerous place, finding meaningful patterns where none exist, and on and on and on. Then the studies say these are all kind of weak correlations. There's no real ironclad argument for why people believe in conspiracy theories. My point about all of this is only to raise the question of, like, why do these people who are on episode after episode of Ancient Aliens and who go to these conferences and who write books and all of this stuff, why do they seem like they are such strong believers in it? And I think there's another phenomenon that is at work, particularly with these people, which is the question of money, in that they're being reinforced by having this be their career. Like, your job is to talk about disclosure, talk about what the government knows or doesn't know. So whether you believe it or not, in your heart of hearts, you're certainly being incentivized to believe it. In the same way that if you work for a corporation and the corporate line is you have to behave this way around a customer or something, you're going to do that whether you're like, I don't necessarily believe it, but I need the paycheck. So I think that's an interesting phenomenon, an interesting manifestation of conspiracy mindedness is, well, sometimes people get paid for it, and those people get to be on very successful shows like Ancient Aliens. Thoughts, Tobias?
You know, in Inconvenient Truth, like Al Gore's thing about climate change, he has a quote about how, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially it's really hard to get people to believe something that works against their self-interest or against their ability to make money or something. It's hard to make people believe something that is going to sort of materially harm them, right? So that if you are making your money from this idea that there is an alien presence and that the government's hiding it, like, it's going to be really hard to convince you that that's not the case. It's where you're getting your money. It's where your prestige is vested in this. It's your personas. And especially if you're going out there making this case in front of all kinds of people, it's really, really hard to back off that, I think. So it seems right. And then you're also, you're going to these, you know, these conferences and stuff where you're speaking to like-minded people, people who look to you as somebody who's an expert in this. You know, I just think psychologically it's hard to turn your back on that stuff, you know, regardless of what the topic is.
Yeah, becomes a community. Well, I mean, and you've talked to a lot of believers over the years, or at least people who have become well-known, famous, successful for the stories they have about abduction or whatever. I mean, do you think that's the case, that these are people who are, you know, have kind of a fringe psychological profile? I mean, obviously some of them may believe in ghosts and whatever, but does it seem more like this is a kind of opportunism or convenience of belief? There's an incentive to believe this. Or are you even able to disentangle whether they really, really believe it or they believe it because that's what it says on the paycheck?
Yeah, you know, I haven't really talked to people that much, like Lou Elizondo or Jeremy Corbell or these people who that's really their living. You know, I've talked to more people who have experienced things. Certainly I've talked to skeptics or people who are, you know, believers, but not necessarily out there on the circuit. So most of the people I've talked to, I feel have been, with maybe one or two exceptions, have been pretty sincere about their beliefs. It doesn't mean I find it particularly convincing, but, you know, whether it's just something they've told themselves, whether they feel as though the evidence they've seen is enough to have them draw that conclusion. There's only one or two people I can think of who I was like, oh, that dude's definitely like a charlatan. Like that guy's like trying to make money off a book or whatever. I was actually, you know, I would have predicted at the beginning of everything that I would have run into more people who seemed as though they were, you know, scamming or trying to make a buck off the popularity of things. That didn't really seem to be the case for the most part. I think it's easy as a skeptic to think that there's something like wrong with people who believe, like there's some psychological thing or there's some gullibility or whatever. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case either. That certainly hasn't been my experience. But people believe different things, you know. In some ways, it's not exactly like religion, but it is a similar sort of, you know, you're kind of putting a lot of faith into things that aren't sort of accepted as something you can like put in your hand and show, like evidence in a court or something like that. I guess that's been my experience, but that's not to say, like, I certainly look. I'm still on Twitter for some reason, and part of it is just like the UFO stuff. And there's a lot of people out there who are like, big news coming, you know. And it's just again and again and again. It's like, oh, I saw this stuff. I can't wait to tell you about it. And it's just constantly sort of ginning up this level of excitement, and just nothing ever comes of it. And that feels to me more like the kind of people who are like, all right, this is where I can make a buck. Yeah.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
We got a couple more things to cover, really just kind of two that the show addresses. And the big one is, as we talked about, these videos that were taken in 2004 off the coast of San Diego by two F-18 pilots who flew off of the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier, and they filmed some things in 2004 that became a trio of videos And that kind of set off this whole modern disclosure thing when they were revealed in 2019. And again, since then, been all of this controversy over what it is that we're seeing and what's really going on. The big takeaway that's at least very funny about it is there's a computer rendering in the episode of an F-18 that's chasing after what looks just like a giant Tic Tac, probably like a mint flavor or that kind of bland vanilla-y flavor of Tic Tac, you know, the one that's like not really a flavor at all, just sort of like the whitish flavor. And based on that rendering, which again is just an animation, would have you believe that the F-18 was like flying alongside this Tic Tac and was able to see the contours of it. But the reality is most of what was seen by these guys was seen through radar, and consequently the debunking of that, which has been done over the subsequent years, has illustrated that what you're seeing in the video that seems like high speed or low speed or whatever is really just a trick of basically motion, right? Like the perspective of the camera versus the speed of the object. And Toby, you looked into that, and I dare you to explain it to me briefly.
There's a couple different types of things. So each of the videos, there's the three videos. One's called FLIR, I think that's how you pronounce it, F-L-I-R. One's called Gimbal, and one is called Go Fast. And the FLIR and the Gimbal look very similar. And I sort of went to Mick West, who's really good at analyzing these things and sort of providing explanations for what you're actually seeing. But those both seem to be planes that are at a distance from behind. The Gimbal one looks like it's a heat signature from the back of a jet. The FLIR video looks is a jet that's quite a ways in the distance. The one that seems a little more interesting is this one that's called Go Fast. That was taken in 2015. And so what it looks like when you're looking at it is it's over water, it's over the ocean, and there's this tiny little dot, and it looks like it's just whipping across the ocean at like really high speeds. And what the explanation for this is it's called parallax, motion parallax, but essentially what you're not seeing is something right by the water moving very fast. What you're seeing is something that's way above the water that's hardly moving at all. So the idea is that it's a balloon, and that what's happening is that the plane has like locked its camera in on the balloon. So as it's like going by the balloon, the background behind the balloon keeps changing, and it changes very fast because the plane's moving fast. And so what it looks like is that the balloon is moving really fast across the water, but in fact, it's staying stationary and the plane is moving very fast. And then so the background for the camera that's behind the balloon is changing very fast, which gives you the idea of motion. Those are sort of the quote unquote official or best accepted explanations for what's on those videos. I think the other important thing to keep in mind is that those videos were declassified, and it's just hard to imagine declassifying a video that had anything of any real worth. If you thought it was from a foreign power or whatever, you wouldn't want to sort of be able to give them the intelligence of what you were able to find out.
And the question then that the show wrestles with, and the people in the show, Nick Pope and others, is, well, why are they releasing it? And the justification for it is it's clearly that they're paving the way for some greater reveal down the road. They're just trying to get us used to the idea of aliens walking among us. But to me, the real reveal is, you know, if that Go Fast video could be resolved, you would probably see that it was one of those Mylar balloons that's like a Sweet 16 balloon, you know. It says Happy Sweet 16th Cynthia or something on it. You know, that's probably the thing that has caused all of this interest. And, you know, just a dumb old Mylar balloon floating across the ocean at no speed at all.
Years ago, there was an online magazine, which I think is still around, called The Debrief, and they said, we have this, like, the best ever photo taken of a UFO. It's taken out of the cockpit of a fighter jet, and they post it, and so the, you know, Department of Defense doesn't know what this thing is. And when you see it, it's like, oh shit, like that's what a UFO should look like. Like it's, there was this metallic thing in the distance, and it was clear that it was a physical thing, and it was way above the clouds and stuff. And it took about an hour once everybody was getting eyes on it for them not to only figure out that it was a Mylar balloon, but to find out that it was a Batman Mylar balloon, and to link to where you could buy it on Amazon. So I don't know how much time the Department of Defense put into trying to figure out what it was. Maybe no time. But it was just kind of interesting that, there was a lot of hype about this from, you know, from a real online magazine, and it just turned out to be this completely ordinary thing. It was just hard at first to figure out what it was, but once people who knew how to examine those things took a look at it, it literally might have been an hour before it was identified.
Yeah, it's true, though, your point that the government is not going to reveal something that might put them in an awkward position or reveal something important to another nation, technology we have or something like that. They're not going to do it. But if someone's pushing hard enough on something that doesn't matter, they'll put it out. And, you know, there's so many layers of bureaucracy that maybe they're like, I don't know. We don't know. We'll just put it out there. Forget it. You know, it's no big deal. And so that's how you have this thing that the show wrestles with in the last basically half of the episode, where they're saying the government's not revealing stuff, even as they're saying the government's revealing stuff. And then they're trying to say, why wouldn't the government want to reveal these things? Well, they don't want the Russians to know. They don't want the Chinese to know. They don't want any of these people to know. Somebody said, who would want to keep this information quiet? And one theory that I liked was, well, the technology that these ships are using to propel themselves is so revolutionary that it would free us from dependence on oil. So clearly oil barons are trying to keep this information locked away so that we can continue to run on combustion-powered engines, which is kind of a fun idea. But again, the show has to come to a conclusion about why the government is obviously revealing this information now. And the one argument that is sort of the first part of the episode is trying to pave the way for us to understand what's coming down the pike. And then the big kind of twist at the end is what's really changing is billionaires, Toby. Billionaires like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, all of these dudes who are trying to put us into space, put us on Mars, put us on the moon. And so the show concludes that the reason the government is finally starting to let this information out is because of space tourism. The knowledge that we're all going to be up there someday, someday very soon, as far as Elon Musk is concerned. And so how awkward, how embarrassing is it going to be if, you know, space tourists land on Mars and are walking around and find the alien version of a Sbarro's pizza and are pissed off, presumably, at the government that they never said anything about it before. But so the idea is, like, they're going to find this stuff out eventually. We better start giving them this information in drips and drabs, because the day is coming that disclosure will happen, not because aliens are going to land on our doorstep, but because we're going to land on theirs and find out that they're just a bunch of slobs too, presumably.
It's a twist.
It's a little twist. We love a little twist.
It's genius. The other thing I want to make sure we quickly mention before we get out of here is there is this funny thing where they talk about how there's no plan for disclosure. Like, there's no plan for, like, once everybody finds out about the aliens, like, what are we going to do? Like, the governments don't have plans. We have plans for this. We have plans for that. We have plans for this other thing, but we don't have plans for this. It's like, well, no shit. It's because they don't exist, right? I mean, if they did, we would have a plan. So, you know, or maybe it's a secret plan. But, like, it's just one of those things where it's like, do you not understand that you are making this really good argument against yourself? Like, it's not showing that the government's callous. It's just showing that the government isn't concerned about it because they're not hiding stuff from you.
You know the plan I like, though.
Is it the one where we all go underground?
Well, no, I do love a plan where we all go underground. It's the plan that was presented by the Brookings Institute in December of 1960. Kick back.
Yeah.
Put some jazz on the hi-fi. Pour yourself a nice highball, Toby. And just let the oneness roll on.
Amen, brother.
And with that, this has been More Like Ancient Aliens. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time. More Like Ancient Aliens is produced by Heather Eagle Ears Wilson, and the music is by Nathan Reedy.
Next time on More Like Ancient Aliens, Natalia Reagan joins us to explore the strange world of insect gonads. Can bugs teach us the secrets of the universe? Are ancient astronauts just misunderstood entomologists? Yes, it's Aliens and Insects, Season 7, Episode 7. Don't miss this episode, packed with science, speculation, and a dash of the absurd.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.